Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt.
Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. It is so big. She looks like one of those rap guys' girlfriends, but, you know, who understands those rap guys? They only talk to her because she looks like a total prostitute, okay? I mean, her butt is just so big. I can't believe it's just so round. It's like out there. I mean, gross. Look. She's just so black.
I like big butts.
It's Thursday, August 6th, 2020.
Yeah, when a girl walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung.
You're about to go down the rabbit hole with Joe and Brian. I'm Brian. With me, as always, sitting way over there, well beyond the socially accepted 6 foot distance, is my good friend Joe. Joe, how you doing?
I'm well, and yourself?
Doing well, doing well. So, what do you think? Another good show tonight?
Good would be an understatement.
We're going to be changing
lives tonight, man.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Well.
Motherfucker, give me two fingers of Southern Comfort.
What are you drinking tonight, Joe?
Well, I'm having a Coke with lime juice and rum. It's a banana rum. And yeah, it's very good. Very good.
I haven't had rum in a while.
Well, yeah.
But you've got me wanting to. I've heard this other places. All these flavored rums. They sound good.
You know how like drinking like whiskey can be like drinking like fire water.
Yeah.
Fire water with a little less burn. Look at it that way. They're actually not bad going down.
Nice.
And you cut it with a Coke with lime juice. Tastes just right.
It's a drink of the islands, isn't it?
Drink of the islands, made out of sugar.
That's what I need to do that. Switch over from the margaritas and the whiskeys and try to do some hurricanes and mojitos.
Well, I don't know how you handle your rum, man.
Yeah, we do. We both know.
A little previous life experience there. Mm. But hey, it's always a good time with Mr. Newman.
Follow the Joe rule. The Joe High rules. Eat first.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a big thing.
Yeah, because if you don't, you will suffer.
Yeah. Well, I'm once again kind of detoxing this week, Joe. So I'm just drinking plain old water.
Water
with some ice thrown in.
No lemon or anything. Just
water.
Cucumber. You're detoxing. Just plain water. Yeah, I am not a fan of water.
I can go through phases. Sometimes I can I crave it. But the other times I have to mix it. I got some sugar-free Kool-Aid mix that I'll sometimes dump in there when I want some flavor. But it's just water tonight.
Hey, well, hey, do you? We're on team Brian.
Yes.
Anyway, we don't want you having an episode. That would not be the greatest.
Right.
So, what do we have on tap today?
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're saying?
Well, the first thing I want to get out of the way is you and I spoke earlier this week about different ways of distributing this podcast. And you've, on multiple occasions, you've brought up the YouTube idea. And I'll be frank with it. You're too nice to say as much, but I've always shit on the idea every time it's been brought up. I look at it. I always look for reasons why we shouldn't do it, and you know that's the wrong approach. I know that. I try not to be dogmatic about things all the time, but I do realize that a lot of people do get their content from YouTube, and so I'm not making a promise, but I've done some research. I'm not making a promise that I'll have one. I'll have it on YouTube this episode. But I have done some research. We both thought it would be really cool if we could maybe show a screenshot of the story that we were currently talking about. Mm-hmm. But that's just too much manual work that I'm just not prepared to do. Mm-hmm. But I've done some research, and I can automate the process of taking this audio file and turning it into a video file with maybe some images that rotate or something like that. So, I don't know. The images I don't think are so important as long as the audio gets up onto YouTube. So, I think we can definitely do that.
I'm curious as to what changed your thinking on the matter.
I just was thinking about it, and I'm just too anti. You know how I feel about social media and all that.
So Brian being Brian.
Yeah. And I just was, but as long as we keep our audio files, we keep the what I'll call the source of truth, the actual original files, then it's not going to hurt to turn them into video and upload it to YouTube. If that's how people want to listen to it, that's fine. So the only thing that I am going to do that's going to take a slightly bit of extra work, but not a lot, is I'm going to remove all of the copyright music that I put at the beginning and end of the shows, because I don't know whether we would get I don't know if they would block it but we'd get emails about it.
You don't want those types of, especially if it's something, if you can avoid that in life, it's best avoid.
So people that get the YouTube version, they're just going to get like the standard music that I know is pod friendly, as they call it. But I just wanted to let everyone know that I looked at the RSS feed stats. I don't think anybody's used it, which I didn't expect. It's kind of a complicated process of using it, but hopefully the YouTube will be will help get the show out there more, maybe.
Like you said earlier, you don't want to raise barriers to listening to it, and so and this way we don't like it, but that YouTube is an existing platform which people are more than comfortable going to. And so
yes, that's a great way of putting it. Raising, you don't want to put barriers up. So I just had to get out of my head there for a while and think about it rationally.
the train is moving forward, and that's what we call progress. Cool.
Yes, sir. Well, I don't know if it's progress or not, Joe, but there's more news out about concerning George Floyd and everything that happened there. Did you get to watch the video?
Yeah, I watched the video, but I watched it filtered through CNN. And
okay,
so that's a good thing to put be aware of when you're watching a video like that.
Yeah, because the entire video is like 10 minutes. I doubt that CNN played the entire 10 minutes.
I did not see the I didn't even see that as an option on YouTube. I saw the longest video I saw was like 5 minutes, and then it's one of those things where in doing this show, I've become much more aware of the commentary that the news guy. I mean, you'll see the image, but you also see or hear the commentary, and I was very aware of that. And so,
okay.
What was your experience with the video?
Well, the video started out. I don't know if you've seen this or not. You'll tell me if you did.
Mind you, I did see there was. I mean, this is the body cam video, but there was other video of like it was maybe a closed circuit television camera that showed the same thing, but from a different vantage point. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the video I seen was just raw body cam footage.
Yeah, I saw it once again, filtered through CNN, which is not the best.
Well, it started out, the way it started out is it showed him, like, you seen, like, some guy through the window of a truck, and you seen the cop was, like, tapping on the window with his fucking gun.
Yeah, that's not an auspicious start to any encounter. It's like, you know, someone had already made their mind that this is going to be, you know, this is the way we're going with this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if a cop came to your door, your car door, with a weapon drawn, what would be your reaction?
Exactly.
Nobody knows like that, and until that happens to you, and if you have a ready answer, you're probably lying.
Yeah, like Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get hit in the hit in the face or whatever.
They say the enemy gets a vote, you know.
But yeah, so the entire video was most. Here's what I took away from the video. I mean, it was a lot of the same thing over and over again. But here's what I took away from the video is that he was under the influence of something, and here's the thing. I thought, if anything, they needed to get him help instead of. I mean, fine, he broke the law, fine, but get him to the hospital first and then maybe, I don't know, but then again, I understand that police deal with people like that all the time, and maybe they're lied to 75 or 80% of the time, I don't know, that was my first thoughts, is they should be trying to get this guy to a hospital, and then, Once he's stable, then take care of whatever laws he broke. That's what I was thinking as I was watching this, because it's hard to watch because the guy was struggling.
Well, and that whole commentary piece that I was telling you about earlier on CNN, one of the things that jumped out to me was, in some ways, it was a commentator was saying something to the effect that, you know, George Floyd was resisting arrest and he was putting up a fight, and you did hear him, you know, talk about, oh, please don't put me in the car, I'm a claustrophobic X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And you typically don't get a vote on that one. You know, if they say you're going into the cop car, you're going into the cop car, but the answer shouldn't be to put him on the ground and put your knee on the back of his neck for the next 8 minutes. That's a multiple choice, you know, answer situation. That's always the wrong answer.
Yeah. He had made the comment well before he was on the ground that he couldn't breathe, that he was having trouble breathing, which a lot of people jumped on as, see, he was, it wasn't the foot on the neck or the knee on the neck or whatever that killed him. It was the drugs or whatever. I actually did a search for what was the exact cause of death. And it was
cardiac arrest, right?
Yeah. It was a cardiac. Yeah.
And so if you're not, you know, you're not breathing in your heart.
Yeah. And it was ruled murder. It was cardiac arrest, but it also with the exacerbation of
aggravated
the other stuff. So I don't know, man. I guess it just depends on how people look at it. I bet people are really wishing that they hadn't adjusted the charges on those officers the way they did.
Yeah, but I want to know who looks at that and say, well, you know, it wasn't a knee to the back of the neck for 8 minutes. It was the drugs he was on. I mean. Had there not been a knee to the back of the neck, you know, he probably would still be breathing and would not have died. So, I mean, I always question people who, you know, I hate questioning people's motives like that. Like, but yeah, if you jump through those types of hoops to find a way that the cops were justified in doing what they did, That's a problematic.
Yeah, and you see it everywhere. I don't. You and I are the only ones I've heard that are even considering some other option.
Well, that's why we have a show. Well, but I mean, if I should hope that somewhere in the police handbook that it's just written or understood that you don't begin an engagement or an encounter with a citizen with your weapon drawn. This is the reason I don't like guns. Chances favor, there are examples where bringing a gun to a situation makes things better, but in general, not so much, in my opinion. And did I ever send you that video? Sorry, that picture of the question is who needs 30 rounds in a chamber, and then there's a picture with a bunch of arrows. Did I ever send you that?
Not positive. What was the overall message?
It was it referenced the Oklahoma massacre, and it had in the background a black man being lynched. And in the meme it says, who needs a 30 round clip, and then it has like an arrow over all the other people in the image that are, kind of in the picture, smiling and watching this guy get lynched. And I'm surprised I did not send that to you, but I'll send it your way.
Yeah, resend it. That I need to see that.
Yeah, we'll do it. Done. But. I don't know how I got to that, but in general, I think, having guns makes situations worse. And this is an example where, at the very beginning of the encounter, weapons drawn, things just got progressively worse. And so I hope that's, going to be in the training someplace that you don't begin an encounter with your weapon drawn.
Yeah. I don't think that was... I don't think that was in the training.
The video started off looking like a carjacking.
Yeah, that is kind of how a carjacking starts.
Yeah, I mean, the guy shows you his gun so that you know he's serious.
Right.
But, terrible business. And if I recall correctly, the footage was of one of the what was from a rookie officer's body cam, and it makes reference, and it shows the guy asking, hey, should we turn him over, or hey, is this right, or hey, right, let me take his pulse, oh my goodness, I don't feel anything. So
right,
and if I recall correctly, there's what they no one's still seen the footage from Mr. Neo in the back of the neck. And they're not necessarily clear how this video got out. So,
yeah, I'd heard that it. I mean, it was when I seen it, it was labeled as leaked. So
yeah, leaked. So, anytime that something comes out leaked like that, that's shorthand for non-official channels.
Right.
So.
Well. We'll keep watching, as always.
Yeah, and we'll keep our eye on this.
Yeah. So this next story, Joe, is just bizarre, I guess, but I hope it's in a benign way, because So I seen a couple weeks ago that people were receiving packets of seeds in the mail that was in packaging to indicate that it was jewelry in the package, but it was actually seeds from China. Mm-hmm. And these were being people randomly, it seemed random, from all over the country were receiving these packages. And then just this week, we find out that where was this guy located at?
He was in Arkansas.
He was in Arkansas, and he went ahead and planted them.
Oh yeah, I mean I love the story because it's like, yeah, that's you know mystery seeds from China. At the very, I mean, it sounds somewhat nefarious. This on the surface, it's like, wait a second, like, why are you getting the mystery seeds from China that come in packages, you know, that look like jewelry? What could possibly go wrong? Oh, everything. So
couldn't it be like almost the start of like an M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yes, exactly. So it's funny that you saw the story a couple weeks ago.
No, I just seen your story about the guy planting the seeds this week, but I'd heard about seeds being received by people a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I hadn't heard anything like that. I hadn't heard anything about seeds being received. I was just scrolling through the through the feed. I'm like, wait a second, that's interesting. And what caught my attention was the guy said he actually planted them. And so this story came from Business Insider. It says Arkansas man said he grew mystery seeds from China in his garden before officials warned against planting them. And what I love about this story is that, you know, it seems, I don't want to say uniquely American because, you know, people all over the world are curious. I guess it's uniquely human, but you know, so he gets these seeds, these mystery seeds, and there's a little story that's linked, and he gets them, and I guess he sits on them for a few days or weeks, and eventually his curiosity gets the best of him, and he takes those things and he throws them in the ground, and so says an Arkansas man recently said he received mystery seeds he received before hearing the U.S. Department of Agriculture warning against doing so. And people across the country have reported receiving seeds in packages appearing to come from China and sometimes masked as jewelry that they did not order. Last Thursday, the USDA said it was investigating the seeds and advised people who received them to contact their local agricultural offices. This guy, Mr. Doyle Crenshaw, was the guy that,
You know what happened the night before? He read the nighttime story to his kid Jack and the Beanstalk.
I'm
gonna plant these and I'm gonna grow my own beanstalk.
Well, the thing is that he planted them and he said he would come back every 2 weeks and throw some Miracle Grow on them, and eventually the seeds grew into a squash like plant with white fruit and yellow flowers. And wow. So, I mean, he said they just started growing like crazy. But the thing is that the feds and I guess the Department of Agriculture are afraid that this could be an invasive weed or have some type of invasive plant or insect species in it that could, you know, be bad for U.S. agriculture. But yeah, that's definitely something that catches your ear catches your eye as odd. Just
yeah.
Random seeds, and then this guy goes and plants them.
Did it at least taste the melons or whatever?
No.
The squashes or whatever? I don't know.
No, I mean, it'll be my very first thing. Yeah, I'd be thinking, yeah, let's try to eat this stuff. But the guy hadn't... In the story and the video, there's no mention of him eating it, but there is mention that the feds came through, took his plants, and they still have no idea what it is.
That's crazy.
Nuts.
Well, I mean, I do understand being susceptible to, or I understand the damage that invasive plants and animals can do to an ecosystem, but I don't know. I'm definitely curious to what these things turn out to be, and I can't believe that how hard can it be to figure out?
That probably should be evidence of, I don't want to say something nefarious, but the fact that they just can't look at it and be like, oh yeah, that's a such and such and such, that should give somebody a moment to pause.
Well, true.
Not, I mean, yeah, just because they can't readily identify it doesn't mean as if it, you know, it's evil, but that should, you know.
Right. Okay, Joe. I've got a little story to tell, and I want you to just tell me, like, on what level of hell that this is gonna land me on.
And how many levels are there? Just you know. Just,
are there? I don't know. Are there nine? Are there nine levels of hell?
Seven or nine. Yeah, I think Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to.
But what? Yeah, I'll okay. Try to call. Yeah.
So, are you familiar with? Have you seen the TV shows American Ninja Warrior?
I have heard of that show, yes.
It's actually a really good show. I like the competition that I mean, it's like real raw competition. You got to be a special kind of athlete to be able to complete these courses and everything. But that's the way that the show, it's like an hour and a half show, and the reason it's an hour and a half and not an hour is before each contestant attempts to run through the course.
This is, you know, they're doing this because their mom has cancer, and
yes,
this is a little bio on them, and this is their struggle, and They just, you know, wake up every day trying to prepare for this thing.
Exactly. And it's that little the reason the more the more righteous their reason, the more I root against them.
So if someone was like, yeah, I want to win the money because I like beer and broads, you'd be like, yeah. But if they're exactly, like, yeah,
that's my man.
But yeah, I'm just trying to raise this money so I can, like, you know, protect, you know, kittens. You're like, yeah, mm-hmm. Boo.
and if you know, they go and you give this 5-minute story about all this, and then, you know, they fall in the water on like the first or second obstacle. I love it. Guess you didn't care about the little cancer kids after all, did you?
No. And because of your failure.
I'm horrible. I know. I'm horrible. But
I'm
confessing my sins to all the people.
And so, to help, I did look up the how many circles of hell there are in Dante's Inferno, and apparently there are nine.
Okay.
So, I knew it was seven or nine, something like that. You want me to go over them really quickly, and if you have any questions?
No. I don't need to know.
Oh, fair enough.
This was just. I just wanted to. I just kind of realized, you know, how horrible I am to think that way, but I do.
Let's see here. No. I'm not gonna. Yeah, I would say. I think that, you know, out of the nine circles of hell, the nine degrees of hell, you know, rooting against the people on TV is not very. Yeah, you haven't laid a hand on anyone, so that's probably like number one, limbo.
Fair enough. I'll take limbo.
Right.
And in fact, limbo sounds like it might be a cool place to hang out.
Yeah, limbo. But yeah, there. I mean, this. I knew there were, you know, seven and nine circles of hell. I never really looked at them very closely, but this is a pretty interesting read.
So we have our president, we call him a commander in chief or a commander in chief.
Yep.
He's also the troll in chief.
You think he's the troll in chief?
Yeah, he loves to troll people all the time.
He's been very active lately.
Yeah. And I just, when you sent me, an article, I think it was about Trump talking about GMAX and Epstein. GMAX is, for the people, for the new listeners, GMAX is what I call, is what I call Ghislaine Maxwell, because every time I hear her name, someone else is pronounced a different way, so I just call her GMAX.
Maybe we should give the a little bit of background as to who she is and how she's mixed up with this whole sordid affair.
I don't know. We can, but if our audience don't know who these people are, I'm a little disappointed in them.
But real brief, basically, Epstein, international playboy pervert, and I mean, is that wrong?
No, pedophile.
Yeah, playboy. Okay, had the Lolita Express, which is an airplane for which he used to fly the rich and powerful around and introduce them to young underage women. GMAX, my understanding is that was basically his she was like the conductor. She would bring people or put them on his path.
Yeah, she would kind of groom them.
Grooming, that's the right word.
And so we all know what happened to Epstein. He committed suicide.
Yeah. That. But how did Trump end up with this?
Well, let me read what I have here, and really this is all that I know. But I guess he was giving an interview, and I guess he was asked about it,
and. Like we said earlier, a good portion of times that politicians, especially Trump, when they're saying something stupid, somebody prompted him.
Yeah. So President Donald Trump said he's among those who are unsure whether convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide in jail.
Now, that's
funny for a president to say that.
Absolutely nuts.
Right. Trump, during a recent interview with Axios, was asked about it when he wished Epstein's former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, well.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know why he did that either.
Yeah, there is a quote that I read off to you that summed it up for me, and I see it in here, so.
Okay. Maxwell was arrested last month on child sex trafficking charges. She's now being held in prison in New York City. Trump said he wasn't aware of the charges when he told reporters at the White House, "I just wish her well."
Quick question. I thought she was at like a hospital for they had COVID in her.
Oh, you know what? That was a hoax, dude.
What?
It was a hoax. I fell for it, and I'm the one that sent you the story, I think.
Okay, well, this is a...
Because I seen that, and I was like, that's how they get her. That's how they get her.
how they're going to COVID her.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, dude. I spread fake news on accident there.
It happened to the best of us. But, we're self-correct.
Wouldn't that have been so great, though?
So is she in the same place where Epstein got it?
I don't know if she is or not, but I don't know. I don't know if she is or not. But I do know this is Trump going on. But I do know that her friend or boyfriend was either killed or committed suicide in jail. She's now in jail. Yeah, I wish her well. I wish you well. I wish a lot of people well. Good luck.
What the?
He says, "Let them prove somebody was guilty." He said in the interview. So.
Yeah. I don't think he's not convinced, and not only is he not convinced, he's just, it's like he's talking and didn't realize he was like in front of a microphone.
Why? Yeah, he started on that stream of conscious kind of a talking.
I would hate to be the press handler for Trump, because that person has to be popping antacids or something every half an hour, 45 minutes.
It has to be like the highest turnover job ever.
Yeah.
After like 3 days, it's like, I can't do this. Yeah. Who's next?
You gotta have like a hole in your heart, just stressing about every time he picks up his phone or gets in front of a microphone. What a terrible job! and the thing is, you can't control it. He's a 70-plus-year-old man. You can't,
Yeah, you're not changing his mind about anything. So, wasn't it though? People, everyone knew that when Epstein was in jail, that he was going to die. But did you really think it would happen?
If everyone knew he was going to die, and they had him on the suicide watch from jump, yeah.
I'm contradicting myself, but it's just like it was like a joke. I mean, everyone was like, everyone just knew it was like he's gonna. They said he's gonna be Arkansas-ized
or suicided,
or all these things, and you joke about it, and you're like, yeah, but it actually happened.
Actually happened. That's the kicker. It's like, yeah, you know, certain things are gonna happen. You know that. Kanye West is going to open his mouth and say something crazy. Trump's going to say something crazy, but you don't expect for people to actually die in prison like that.
Yeah, it was anyway. So, if she was, I said if she was to go the same way, that's just them and they being. I'm just going to call them the elites, I guess. Just slapping us in the face. It's like we're above the law, and
it's that we do what we want. I want.
We all know that we're shady, and what are you gonna do about it? Nothing.
Yeah, we've got so much money, we can come and get you. I mean, yeah, a New York City prison can't keep us from you. That's
right.
Kind of scary.
Yep. Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. That's my white girl impersonation.
What song was that?
That is the intro to Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back.
So if, I think if Chance's favorite, if you were under the age of what? 50? You know about the song.
Yes.
Unless you're fresh out of the wound. So what popular reference did that song give us?
Black girls and their big booties.
That and I think what was the girl's name again?
Becky's.
Becky.
We have the typical Becky's.
And it's kind of amazing how disgusted these chicks were. They're like, oh my God, just look at it. It's just a rounded, just flopping. It's like, hey, I mean.
they didn't give the other girl's name, but I'll bet it was Karen.
Becky and Karen makes about right.
and haven't they been in the news a lot lately? Or at least Karen has.
Karen definitely has. What has Karen not been up to lately?
Exactly. I first mentioned Karen back when we were talking about the Amy Cooper, Christian Cooper, the white girl walking her dog in the park and freaking out over the black dude. And that's when I first called her. That's when I first used the term Karen on the show. It's since been, I think I told you a few shows back that we need to stop using it because it's been co-opted by the mainstream, and as with everything, they've fucked it up.
Well, you were quite emphatic that it's over. It's just, this, yeah, it's just, you know, just
Yeah, stick a fork in it, it's done. It's just, you know, just game over.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just been tainted. It's people use it now in the wrong context and everything. But that's beside the point. We just wanted to talk about Karen's and Becky's. I thought it would be fun.
Yeah. I see that you came across a rather interesting definition of that we can both agree on.
Yeah, and this actually came from Merriam-Webster Dictionary, good figure.
Yeah.
But they define Becky as a white woman who is ignorant of both her privilege and her prejudice. Yeah. So I guess that's fair.
I never thought of Becky as anything other than white female, like white suburban, you know, middle to upper middle class female who that other stuff may, you know, being unaware of her privilege or prejudice, those may be elements but not essential elements.
Yeah, I've never, from the time I first, and through all of the memes that I've seen of Karen's, they never really had any racial overtones to them, and so I never really thought about them in racial terms. The only racial thing that I thought about them is that they are usually always white, but they're. Their vitriol is never really aimed at any. I don't think they typically attack people based on anything specific other than.
What was the definition you found for Karen? Because I like the one for Becky.
Yeah, this is a Karen. Karen is basically a graduated Becky. who's extremely aware of her privilege and weaponizes it.
Right.
Again, I don't know, but it sounds okay, I guess.
I mean,
Becky,
you're saying.
I don't know. Let me finish this out. A Becky convinces herself and attempts to convince others that her whiteness doesn't matter. A Karen doesn't even bother to fake it. She knows it's her big joker and plays it whenever necessary. I don't necessarily agree with all of that, but
you're saying
no, go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, it dawned on me that you are not likely to encounter a Karen in that respect. And so the definition that we had talked about earlier, the woman that wants to speak to the manager. But I when we look at Amy Cooper, the Amy Cooper scenario, or if we look at another scenario, and this is funny because since the Amy Cooper scenario, I have seen actually a video came across the wire earlier this week with a quote unquote Karen terrorizing a Hispanic couple. I'm gonna send that to you offline just for giggles, but yeah, this chick was clearly crazy. But and the definition was that a Karen is a basically graduated Becky who is extremely unaware of her privilege and weaponizes it. Becky convinces herself and attempts to convince others that her whiteness doesn't matter. A Karen doesn't even bother to fake it. Yeah, I'm sorry to have read that again.
I'll say this. I think you asked me offline, and I think that the Karen, the Amy Cooper, Christian Cooper thing that went down, it would have went down regardless of his color. We just wouldn't have heard about it otherwise. But I'm convinced that if she sees someone that she thinks is doing something wrong, regardless of their color, she's going to jump in their shit. That's what I consider a Karen.
But the thing is, in this case, the Karen was doing something wrong. And the other person was, the person wasn't even jumping in their ish. It was just saying, hey, could you
break my rule? Yeah, yeah. You're right about that. Yeah, I got that backwards, didn't I?
Oh, it wasn't backwards, but like just, you know, it seemed like a Karen's ready to jump in someone's ish, you know, for...
Well, yeah. And I'll stand by what I said. If it would have been a white dude who would have jumped in her shit, she would have reacted the same way, I think.
But she would not have called the cops and been like, you know, this white guy... I mean, and that's the thing. She would not have said, this white guy is threatening my life.
I'm not sure about that, man. That's almost mind reading. I mean, I don't know. A Karen is a devious type of person.
On that, and that we can agree on.
Yeah. So.
But hopefully, neither of us comes across a Karen. And
you know, yeah, we've all known Karens in our time. They hadn't been identified and labeled yet, but yeah.
Could you imagine how your life might suck a little bit if you were a white female named Karen?
Yeah, I have an old girlfriend named Karen, and she'd be about the right age.
Is she a Karen?
I doubt. I don't know, man. I was 19 and she was 17 or 18. So
I think we may have talked about her offline years ago. And we can revisit that offline here. If anything,
I can say her name is spelled different.
With a Y?
It's a Y N.
Yeah.
R Y N.
Yeah. I always watch for people with different spellings. So like, I remember hearing there was a definite difference between a Sarah with an H and a Sarah without an H. I can only imagine what the difference between a Karen with a Y and a Karen without a Y are. But that's maybe here, you know, that might be another story.
Right. Well, let me move on to our next thing here. And just so the people know, I'm gonna try to keep this show at a steady clip because I'm on battery power tonight.
Oh no!
So, and you can never trust what the battery gauge says, but as of right now, it says I have an hour and 15 minutes left, so we should be fine. But if anybody's wondering why, if I seem like I'm in a hurry, it's I'm racing against computer batteries tonight,
and we got some important ish to get through.
Yeah, we do. So one last thing here, and this is we had talked a while back about Russiagate, and it was just an interesting conversation, I thought, but I came across these two clips that I found I thought might shine some light on. And I mean, I know everyone has an agenda, so take what's said in these clips with a grain of salt, I suppose. But it sounds pretty legit to me. So let me play this for you, Joe, and let's see what you think.
All right, please educate us.
I think the seminal moment for me when I realized that these events going back to 2009 all the way to the...
I'm sorry, I should say this is a guy named Seamus Bruner. I believe he's from the Government Accountability Institute, and he is being interviewed. And that's all that I know, I'm afraid. So there we go.
President's impeachment, 2019, were connected was I had a dinner with a senior Clinton campaign official about two springs ago, and I started talking about everything I'd learned about Christopher Steele, and he said, well, why do you think we did the project? And I said, well, I assumed it was to dirty up Donald Trump, and he said, well, it actually started much earlier than that. What is it? And he said, we came into the 2016 campaign worried that Peter Schweitzer's book, Clinton Cash, and the aura of the Clintons cashing in on the Russia policy was going to be one of her liabilities, and we wanted to scare Republicans away from it. So we started researching people like Paul Manafort, all the figures that later came out in the scandal, and we were just looking for a way to scare Republicans off from not using Russia as an election issue. I started to think, oh my gosh, this isn't what we thought it was. It was a neutralization effort to kind of keep an issue off the table in the 2016 election. And then Donald Trump kind of plays into it. And then when Christopher Steele takes it to the FBI, it, you know, takes off in an entirely different direction. I said, is that what happened? And I remember the aide went, looked up and down about two or three times and finally said, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's pretty interesting.
So Christopher Bruner, the person who worked for the Government Accountability Institute, spoke.
Seamus Bruner.
I don't know how I got Christopher. Oh, we did hit Christopher Steele. Thank you. Seamus. Yeah. Seamus Bruner, who worked for the Government Accountability Institute, was talking to a nameless, faceless senior Clinton campaign official.
Right.
And just, you know, and basically, so it was,
you know, if you look at it from the aspect that no one was expecting Trump to win. It was always going to be Hillary. This makes sense. I won't say almost. This makes sense. I don't know if it's the fact, but it makes sense.
It does make sense insofar as, you know, did you hear much about that whole, you know, Russia? Did you hear much about? Well, yeah, Russia was all over the campaign. Well, after the campaign,
I heard a lot about Uranium One all over the place, but so, it was supposedly debunked, as with most issues that people don't want to talk about. Someone debunks it.
So I only heard about Uranium One on the fringes, and it always seemed to come from almost like a kook angle, like, you know, people who think this is an issue are crazy.
Yeah. Well, I didn't read that book that he referenced, but
Clinton Cash.
I didn't read the book.
I do recall hearing it, and I'm like, yeah, just by the very title of it, and you think about, you know, how they were raking in all that money through the Clinton Foundation while Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. That on its face just seemed shady. I was surprised that didn't come out more during the campaign. But so the idea was to keep people from talking about that by basically doing some opposition research and trying to scare Republicans off of it.
Right.
Did it work?
It worked in so much as I think that Uranium One never became an issue.
Well, that's it. It seemed to have never become a mainstream media issue. I never recall hearing it. I recall hearing it from some conservative bloggers and conservative YouTubers, but never recall hearing it on the mainstream media. Or if you did, it was one of those, you know, blink and you'll miss it. They did not cover it the way they covered the Clinton emails, which to me it's a big story, but not as big as, you know, Clinton taking money from, you know, people or governments all over the world while she was Secretary of State. That seemed like a much larger story.
Yes. I have one more clip here. I think it might, because I think neither of us are completely sure on what Uranium One really was about, and I think this clip might shed a little bit of light on it, or it might just confuse us more. I don't know, but
my understanding of Uranium One was basically Clinton brokering a deal whereby we sold a significant amount of uranium to the Russian government.
Yes,
but I
know nothing more beyond that.
Let's hear the clip.
All righty.
He worked his way into the good graces of the top American figures for a company known as Rosatom. Rosatom is the state-controlled, Russia state-controlled nuclear empire of Vladimir Putin. And he gets in, and very early on, he finds out.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think he's talking about someone named Doug Campbell, but I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, my very next question was, who is he? But thanks.
Yeah, I think he's talking about a guy named Doug Campbell.
If you're going to be a consultant for the Russians, you have to pay kickbacks. They're asking me to kick back money. Well, he delivers the money they've taken gladly, and now he's on the inside. And for 3-4 years, he's informing the FBI that at the same time that the Obama administration is doing these deals, they're going to give billions of dollars of American utility contracts to Russia. The government arranges that. American government arranges that. They allow them to buy uranium under the ground, a transaction that's known as Uranium One. Believe it or not, that was not the most valuable thing that Vladimir Putin got out. He wanted those billions of dollars of nuclear fuel contracts, because then American utilities would be reliant on Russian fuel for years to come. And he knew it. And documents show, if he got that deal in place, Americans would not mine their own uranium. So all of America's uranium mines have shut down. We couldn't produce uranium tomorrow if Vladimir Putin shut us off. And so he gets into all of this, and then he's reporting this in real time to the FBI, and the FBI is telling him, your information's made it to President Obama's desk. It's made it to the desk of Robert Mueller. And so he's sitting there, and all of a sudden, after delivering oodles of evidence, he comes out and he finds out, they just approved the Uranium One deal. The Obama administration just gave them 20% of America's, after I just told you, this is their strategy of global domination. They're paying kickbacks. And the agents tell him, why, and he asks the agents, why did they let this happen? He said, you have to ask your politics about politics. But it is irrefutable that at the moment, the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, President Obama authorized all of these transfers of contracts and uranium to the Russians, they knew the recipient company. Rosatom was engaged in conspiracy in the United States, racketeering, kickbacks, extortion, and bribery.
I know what you're going to ask is what, when they said you'd have to ask so-and-so, I don't know what they said. I've listened to it over and over again. I can't make out what he said. He was tripping over his words there, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, as glad to know, I'm happy to know that I'm pretty predictable in that. Cause I'm yeah. All right, cool.
You'd have to ask. I couldn't make it out. So anyway, it's that's interesting. I guess I didn't know. I mean, if that's true, I didn't know that we relied on Russia that much for what do you say? Are you uranium utilities?
Yeah, I don't know. He said that the process of we sold a lot of our uranium to them, and we've also closed down our own capacity to develop uranium. And so, as a result, with all these contracts going to Russian companies, we wouldn't have access to uranium through them, which seems to be it seems to be the thing to do if you believe that we're going to be moving away from nuclear in general. That, okay, this is a book or a line of business that we're no longer even interested in playing in. Here, sure, have them. Yeah, but even that seems foolish when you think about what Russia's been doing with energy politics all throughout the Baltic states, basically using energy as a weapon.
Right.
So, If what this guy is saying is true, I mean, that's, you know, somebody needs to be answering some. I mean, it's one of those things where if even half of this is true, why aren't people being lined up and having cameras in their face and forced to answer tough questions? That's a failing of our media right there.
Yeah. One of many failures.
Many.
Yeah. Well, Joe, it's time.
It's time.
It's time. There's a word that is, it's like, it's an electric, what is it, the third wire on subways or whatever, the third rail, yeah. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Nobody until.
Until this podcast.
That's right.
And we're gonna talk about it, and it's such a big issue that we'll probably split this up. But what are we talking about tonight, Joe?
Well, we're talking.
You say it.
We are talking about the big R word, and that word is reparations.
Yeah, reparations.
And you know, and you're right, this is a very big topic, and it's not likely to be done justice in one show.
Right.
So we put our heads together, and we thought that we'd break this up a little bit.
Yeah.
And journalism 101 fashion, we're going to break this topic up into the basic questions of journalism: who, what, when, where, why, and how. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, I like it. Let's do it.
Yeah, and because this topic is so multifaceted and multidimensional, we're going to tackle three of those questions today. And those are who, why, and where. Okay? And so, just for good measure, I thought I'd just start off the conversation with a definition of reparations.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, and so, in general, reparations are the making of amends for a wrong one has done by paying money or otherwise helping those who have been wronged. That sounds, you know, that's the dictionary definition from Google. Okay. And on its face, with that you know, very, I don't want to say bare bones, it's pretty bare bones, but just, you know, a general definition. What say you?
Yes, I agree. That sounds like a general definition. Yeah.
And just for good measure, let's go into this. So if reparations are just a you know, making amends for a wrong, we're gonna have to be more specific. In this context, we're talking about reparations for American descendants of slaves.
Yes, this is what I would, this would be under the who.
Yeah,
I would say, yeah, it's ADOS, American Descendants of Slaves, and only them.
Now,
let me do a quick preface to this, if you don't mind.
Of course.
A year ago, just reparations, it was a non-starter. It would just be a non-starter for me. I had the, you know, you weren't a slave, so because your ancestors were, why do you, you know, that whole I guess white person take on reparations.
But the crazy thing is that it's not just a white person's take on it. It's well, you were saying, I'll let you
But anyway, I've we've mentioned this other podcast on the show a few times, and the main guy is this dude named Mo Fax, who is a black guy. He is very much about ADOS, American Descendants of Slaves. And I've listened to him speak about the subject, and he worded it in a way that I had never thought of, and so instead of thinking of reparations as, you know, a payday, you know, just, you know, giving money to black people because they're black, it's payment for services already rendered.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of like the idea of giving money to black people just because they're black, like most things, this onion has multiple layers to it.
Right. So, exactly.
Opening. Yeah, I like the idea of getting black, you know, giving black people money. It's more layers than that, more complicated. So.
It is. And I think services rendered, that being the work, you know, building basically the infrastructure of not exclusively, but a large part of the infrastructure of the country. You know, there work was done that wasn't paid, and that's what they're. And then so that's the services. You know, it's that's the services rendered, and so this is when you put it as this is payment for that, it doesn't seem so outrageous, at least not to this white guy.
All right. And thank you for that. And, and telling us how you first came in contact with the idea of reparations that was said in a way that made sense to you. Let me go back into my history with the term, the movement as it currently exists. Late 2016, early 2017, I encountered two people online by the name of Yvette Carnell, who's an activist that works out of Atlanta, Georgia, and another person by the name of I feel so embarrassed. Let's see here. I should have his name, Antonio Moore. Who's an activist that works out of Los Angeles. These two, almost single-handedly, to my knowledge, brought up and raised the profile of the whole reparation debate. And even if you listen to Mo Fax, he heavily references and uses the language from the two aforementioned people, Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, but it's interesting to see how this, you know, this whole reparations thing, literally, yeah, 2 years ago, oh, sorry, 1 year ago, yeah, you know, you were like, yeah, you would have been against it. 2 years ago, I had barely heard about it, and so I was just becoming, more aware of the argument, and what you put your finger on it is correct. Is that, you know, it's the idea is that it's payment for services rendered on the part of American descendants of slaves. And so if, like what you put your finger on, that whole infrastructure of the country, so much of the wealth and, you know, the wealth that undergirds our society today was built by and on the backs of African American descendants of slaves. And so the idea that, and this is something that I think I may have put my finger on this, I think last show, if you listen to Democrat politicians, they're very good in practice at diagnosing the issues that that plague the African American community. But when you ask them, what's your solution? It's crickets. And so I thought that, you know, this topic of conversation is very important because it begins to start to address some of the ills that you find in the African American community, and a good portion of them have to do with just basically being poor, you know.
Right.
So yeah, there's that.
Well, let me ask you, since if we're going to make the distinction that there's a group of black people who are descendants of slaves, what about the other, and I'll say the word, the people of color,
where
black and brown and all colors just kind of become one big group.
Yeah, and I think once again, thank you for putting your finger on this. And if you want to make reference to a group while ignoring their issues, lumping them into the people of color camp is a perfect way to do it, because people of color can refer to anybody from the person who literally got off the boat or got off an airplane from Shanghai yesterday to a person whose family has been here since 1619. And so it's one of those terms that it's clever. I mean, if you are not careful, you could think to yourself, yeah,
they're talking about me. They're talking about my issue. But in actuality, when you look at the way the term is applied politically, it typically, it's anybody who's not white, pretty much. And anybody who's not white doesn't have that special claim to have been part of the people who helped build the foundation of this country. So that term is, I think, is, I don't want to say if you're using that term, you're an enemy, but we are likely not talking about the same thing. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the problem is that you can't. There's just no way. If you want to talk about reparations in the concept, in the terms of just people of color, it's a non-starter, and it could never be done.
And rightly so, because I think it's important for us to put our finger on this, that there is a difference between, someone whose family, went through slavery and they are a descendant of American slavery, and someone who maybe their family got here in the 80s from Nigeria or
right.
the Caribbean. And it's not to say that being black, it's not to say that they're not black enough, but it is to say that they don't have that same claim to have put in the work to deserve some type of payment. So it kind of reminds me of how, the old saying with the Democrats was, the Democrats just want to give it all away.
Mo made a good, I'm going to butcher this probably, but he made a good, he said, and maybe he took this from someone else, I don't know, but it's essentially that they use the black man to use the black man's plight to get stuff. But then it's always like the black man but then everyone gets it and it's the black man left. No, they use the black man to open the door, but then the black man is the one left holding the door open while everyone else goes in. Something to that effect.
Yeah, and you can see this at work with the whole Black Lives Matter, and when you're talking about, you've been referring to this several times when walking in the F1, that you'll see, Black Lives Matter, but the real beneficiaries of it often seem to be LGBTQ,
XYZ
organizations. And so, I mean, that's a great example of how, they'll use the, and Yvette Carnell, they have this this phraseology where they'll try to cloak themselves in blackness or cloak themselves in the civil rights struggle, but then switch the topic. So I remember the first time that it dawned on me that civil rights also largely included, a homosexual's right to marry. That to me hadn't clicked, but it is part of civil rights. It's not the civil rights you think of in terms of a lot of.
Yeah, civil rights has a really, really wide spread now.
It's
by today, don't you think?
It's quite expansive, and this is not to poo-poo or to denigrate or make less important other people's rights, but it is to say that we don't have all the same story. I don't believe that a person who is gay suffers the same way that a person who is African American does. You can't get me to believe that. And for a while there was a large attempt to be like, hey, we're gay people and our struggle is just like yours.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like 5 years ago, but it was probably longer. Time flies.
Well, I remember first hearing that argument when I was in high school.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And
I'm way off.
Oh, no, I mean, we encounter things when we encounter things, so to speak. But It's like, what's wrong with you people? Is, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, once again, it's not to say that they don't have rights or shouldn't have rights. It's just disingenuous in my mind to, like they say, put on the cloak of blackness and masquerade as if you're fighting for the same thing. That's disingenuous in my opinion. But it's been a very popular and successful tactic. That is one thing we should note there.
Yes.
But like what it, so I mean that's who. And so
mm-hmm.
To my mind, and this may be somewhat controversial, one of the big arguments as to why there should not be reparations is that often they say, well, who should get it? Should it be people who are just black in America, or should it be a specialized group? I, for one, think it would not be very difficult to figure out who should get reparations in America if that was to be the case.
That was one of my questions, is there a database or a record, or do we know when we say ADOS, do we know roughly how many people we're talking about?
Yes, roughly about 13 to 14 million people.
Okay.
And a quick rule of thumb for me would be, you know, if you can trace your lineage, if you can trace both grandparents to being back in the United States, you know, I would just say during the Board versus Brown of Education, when that case hit and was decided, I mean, people who, if you can say, yeah, I had two grandparents here in the States during that time, I mean, that's a pretty fair, you know, yeah, that person, you know, almost 90, if you're black in America in 1955, you're almost 100% likely to have been at ADOS, because it's very interesting that shortly after African Americans got the whole right to vote and all that good fun stuff, the U.S. Congress approved a bill for basically to increase immigration. It's like the Immigration Act of 1965, where basically a lot of the immigrants from Africa, the Caribbean, and Asia started coming in to the States after that bill. Prior to 1965, if you know, you were either, for the most part, you were black or white in the United States. You weren't Hispanic, you weren't, you know, Caribbean. There may have been Hispanics and Caribbeans in certain portions of the country, but they weren't as widespread and prodigious as they are now.
You know, with that, I may get this wrong. I think it's is it familytree.com or one of those services that let people trace their lineage. Uh-huh. I'm positive they have a database. They could tell. They seem to. I'll bet you they have enough information to track this down.
It's crazy because a lot of those organizations are funded by, guess here.
Oh,
you're never going to guess. You can.
Who?
The Mormon Church.
Oh, I am not surprised. I I listened to another podcast, and the guy, he's Mormon. He's not like, I mean, he's just like he's from a Mormon heritage. He's not like a religious guy or anything.
He's like an ex-Mormon.
But he's made references to that before. Like, they've got this incredible database of that's crazy, man.
Well, and there's a religious reason behind that. Basically, they believe in retroactively, quote unquote, saving your ancestors who've already passed. And so, let's say, you know, your ancestor died and they are a Catholic, you know, filthy Catholic. That's just a joke, clearly. You could using this process go back and retroactively save their souls from hell, according to the Mormons. And so that's so you're right. They, you know, that's that would be a database to prove that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah. But truth be told, anyone alive today, sorry, 99.9% of the people alive today in America have some type of birth certificate that lists their mother and their father. And you can easily go from there and find out who their mother and father was. And so it should not be something that was a, you know, tremendously difficult Herculean task to figure out who was here or who has family that has roots here, so to speak.
Well, I think certainly if you're guesstimating 13 mil, yeah, I don't know what kind of, I guess maybe the next time when we talk about the what or the I guess the funds or however much we're talking about, are we going to talk about that tonight?
No, that's on the list for tonight.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Depending on the amount, I mean, we've already shown that we can give a lot of money to basically everyone.
Well, we talked about that whole thing too about you know, the being able to turn on the printing press and produce trillions of dollars to make sure that banks have continued liquidity. That's that dirty little secret. What you call it, like a new monetary policy? That
yeah, I can't think of what it was called. But I wish I was smarter about that stuff. Maybe that's something that we can try to talk about another time too, because I can't imagine there has to be a point where it collapses. But
oh, there's a point, and the thing is that, you know, no one knows what that point is. It's that thing where you only know it once you've crossed it, and people no longer have faith in the U.S. dollar.
Yeah,
but yeah, we can. I mean, the difference between being smart on an issue and not being smart is a couple weeks, so we can do that.
Yeah. Well, Joe, I hate to keep pushing this along, but my battery is now red.
Oh snap! Okay.
And, it says although I don't, it says I still have. This is so professional, I know. It says I have an half an hour still, but
yeah, that means 15 minutes.
Yeah, I wanna play this last clip. This is our something to laugh about clip.
But
and then we can get out of here. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's wrap this up.
One last thing. So we talked about who,
right?
Yeah, and it sounds like we talked about why as well. The services rendered,
right?
And we also talked about where. That's easy here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So. We talked about who, where, and why, and yeah, we can go to the next piece. Let's go out, you know, jollily.
Yeah, for sure. The COVID thing is still big. Is it still hot and heavy? And I know that this mask. I don't know, this mask thing drives me up the wall. I just, to go on the record, if there was ever any doubt, I think that they're bullshit.
That does not sound like the Brian Newman I know.
Doesn't it?
Well, just shocking.
This is. I got a clip here that I don't. This may. I don't know. This. I have mixed feelings about these kinds of videos, but I found it humorous. I found it more humorous than annoying, so enjoy.
All right.
Oh, my apologies. I was wearing my mask because I just got back from a full day of being a good person. I love my mask because it's a simple yet effective way to display my righteousness. Am I concerned that two children in China dropped dead because they were forced to wear masks in gym class? Nope. Am I concerned that we're creating a generation of children who will be socially awkward and conditioned to fear their fellow man? No. Am I concerned that I'm contributing to an impending socialist technocracy that will enslave the global population? Not even a little bit. Am I concerned that my mask is symbolic of my compliance to the social conditioning that will eventually lead to the forced vaccination of every man, woman, and child on planet Earth? Not a chance. And why am I not concerned, you ask? I'm not concerned because I decided a long time ago that shallow and significant gestures are a much easier way to showcase my morality than actually being moral. Because in order to be a real good person, I gotta stand up to a real bad person. And I don't like standing up to or for anything. I've decided that it's much easier to trick my own mind into thinking compliance is a virtue instead of what compliance actually is. Cowardice. I prefer to float through life completely ignorant to the fact that every socialist takeover has always begun in the exact same way, with government overreach, public shaming, censorship, and a toilet paper shortage. Don't believe me? Google toilet paper shortage in communist Russia. Did you think you were having a unique experience? I prefer to pretend history never repeats itself so that I can stand by and turn a blind eye every time history repeats itself. I prefer to call anyone who speaks up, fights back, or stands their ground a lunatic or a conspiracy theorist so that I don't feel obligated to do my own research. Research takes away from me time. And lastly, I prefer to put on my mask and stand among a sea of masks so that I never have to be seen, be free, or reveal the deep, dark shadows that lurk within me.
Hey, bro.
There you go.
Hey, yeah. Like, can you tell me what you really think about wearing masks? Because I mean, there were some shades of gray in that video that that just needed to be parsed out a little bit.
You're too funny, Joe.
that was a lot.
I typically don't like these overproduced kind of. I know that it's just they're trying to get clickbait and whatnot, but I am going to Google toilet paper in Soviet Russia. That was interesting.
I was in the process of Googling it right now. Toilet paper shortage, Soviet Union. Let's see here, but people tend to misunderstand shortages in the Soviet Union, USSR, including shortages in or toilet paper. First toilet paper in the Soviet Union was available in stores, but not always, so people hoarded and stored as much as they could, the same way with other goods and foods.
That's funny. It is funny.
It's funny, boo-hoo, and it's one of those things where I think we have a disagreement on this issue. I think we both believe this thing is somewhat overblown, but I think you're a little bit further along that path than I am.
Okay.
But you are right. There is a sense of you're a bad person if you're not wearing your mask. That you hate your grandmother. You're just totally inconsiderate and not concerned with other people's health, and I don't necessarily think that's the case, but
right. Well, there you have it, Joe. Another one in the can.
In the can. maybe not the can. Maybe we can use a different one. But yeah, another one for the in the books. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
That one might be better. It can sound like we could be talking about a shitter.
Only Joe. Only you, Joe.
Yeah, sorry. I'm that guy.
Nah. But, yeah, it's been fun, as always. And let's see.
It's been an auditory adventure.
Wow.
I just made that. That's a Joe High original.
You just pulled that out of your ass, huh?
Yep.
That's good.
And me and a couple.
Look at me. Look at me. Talk about the ass, the can. I got a maybe. I have problems.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, there are people who are trained to talk to you about that, man. And and what do they say? Admitting you have a problem is the first step.
Oh my! I have many problems, Joe. We don't have enough time or battery to get into them.
Fair enough.
But I got an idea, Joe.
What's that?
I think we should do this again in 7 days. What do you say?
I think that's a winning idea, man. Little in the middle, but you got much back. Little in the middle, but you got much back.